Continuing the ninth chapter, and accepting flower garlands. The next instruction is that one should put on flower garlands which are offered to the deity. In this connection, in the 11th canto, 6th chapter, verse 46 of Srimad Bhagavatam, Uddhava says to Krishna, "My dear Krishna, I have taken things which you have used and enjoyed, such as garlands of flowers, saintly articles, garments and ornaments, and I eat only the remnants of your foodstuff, because I am your menial servant. So therefore, I am sure that I shall not be attacked by the spell of material energy." The purport of this verse is that for any person who simply follows these rules and regulations of decorating the body with the marks of tilak, of gopichandana or sandalwood pulp, and who puts on the garlands which are offered to Krishna, there is no question of being conquered by the spell of material energy. At the time of death, there is no question of such a person's being called by the constables of Yamaraj. Even if one does not accept all of the Vaishnava principles, but still takes the remnants of foodstuffs offered to Krishna or Krishna Prasad, he will gradually become qualified to rise to the platform of a Vaishnava. Similarly, in the Skanda Purana, Lord Brahma tells Narada, "My dear Narad, anyone who puts on his neck the flower garland which was formerly used by Krishna becomes relieved from all disease and reactions to sinful activities, and gradually he is liberated from the contamination of matter." So here now in the next activities of devotional service, then accepting the flower garlands. So this is here we can see the flower garlands or anything that's been offered to the Lord. This is called, in Sanskrit, called Nirmalya. Nirmalya means the Lord's remnants. So it's interesting, the term Nirmalya means without material contamination. Nirmalya, no material contamination. So those things that have been used by Krishna, then they purify us. So Uddhava, who's one of Krishna's intimate associates, very intimate associate, then he says he always wears the garlands used by Krishna, always takes the remnants of his foodstuffs. So whatever Krishna has used, that his garments, ornaments, anything like this, he always takes those and wears those. Because he feels that then he won't be attacked by the material nature. Because being attacked by material nature means we forget Krishna. That's basically what it is. So if we're using those things used by Krishna, always everything's in relationship to Krishna, then we're always remembering Krishna, so there's no maya. Where there's Krishna, there's no maya. Right? Krishna Surya Sama, maya hoy andhakar. That's all I remember. Oh well. So wherever there's Krishna, there's no maya. So then, if we always are accepting these things for this purpose, not out of because we get the garland because, the garland goes to whoever is very respectable or all these things. No, we just want the remnants of the Lord. And from this, then we become purified. We always become situated in remembering about Krishna. And then here it says also the Yamadutas, they will not come, whoever, someone who is always wearing and using these things. And the Skanda Purana, then Brahma tells Narad Muni that anyone who wears this, they will be relieved from all disease and all sinful reactions. Like that. Gradually, they are liberated from the contamination of matter. So, two things have to happen in this whole process. One is that we become detached from the material nature, and two, we are become drawn and attached to Krishna. So the two, to become attached to Krishna, you have to become detached from the material nature. In fact, the only way to actually become detached from the material nature is to become attached to Krishna. Otherwise, by mechanical process, we can detach ourselves seemingly to some degree, but all we do is detach ourselves grossly and attach ourselves subtly. Like that. We don't actually become detached from the material world. Because material world, the intelligence and the mind, which the impersonalists will use in their process of detachment, is still the subtle body. And it's very few. When we talk about the impersonalists, we hear about Sukadev Goswami, and we hear about the four Kumaras. Now, the four Kumaras are the first incarnation of the Lord. When the list of the 22 incarnations given in the Bhagavatam, the four Kumaras are the first. So they're the incarnation of, like, practice of brahmacharya and the austerities of this practice. So they are able to elevate themselves to this platform because they're representing the Lord here. And then Sukadev Goswami, but this for the pastime. I'm not sure how he took on this mentality, because originally then he is the parrot, the Srimati Radharani. So he has that relationship of neutrality. But from neutrality to the impersonal platform is very close. Basically, someone who is on the impersonal platform, then they become appreciative of the Lord's glories, like the four Kumaras. They worship the Lord in Shantaras. They're situated in Brahmabhuta, and from that platform they appreciate the Lord's glories and pastimes and personalities. So they're devotees. But they're devotees in this aspect of the Shantaras. So they're quite close. But we see here, for it to happen, one has to be completely detached from the material nature. Brahmabhuta has to be obtained to become fully attached to Krishna. So the two have to go together. So we don't find many examples of anyone coming to the Brahmabhuta platform without devotional service. We don't find. Right? It's just not there. Other than these two examples, I don't know of any others really where they are properly situated like that. They may be impersonalists, but they haven't attained Brahmabhuta. Just like Kasyapa, at some particular point, he was an impersonalist. And then, because we see that afterwards, after the pregnancy of Diti in the evening, then he is taking his bath in the river and he is offering doing his tarpanas and that. Then it is, Prabhupada points out in the purport there that he was actually an impersonalist. So we see, though his philosophy is he accepts the impersonal understanding, he is not on the Brahmabhuta platform. Otherwise, he would not have been, deviated from his vows by Diti's determination. His determination would not have been wavered. But it was. So he was not situated on the Brahmabhuta platform. So this Brahmabhuta, then, the whole thing is the two happen simultaneously. So here is by wearing the nirmalya of the Lord, the garlands and other, taking the prashad like this, one becomes relieved from all diseases. So the main disease is that we want to enjoy the material nature. So this we become relieved from. That is the most, that creates all the other diseases. Just like it is said that all the physical diseases, they come from the stomach. They all start in the stomach. That when there's improper digestion, when there's an improper balance within the stomach, that indigestion from the indigestion, the undigested food matter becomes a toxin in the body. And that toxin then spreads in the body because the blood takes things out of the intestines. So they take whatever's there. Doesn't matter if it's good, bad, or otherwise. They just take whatever's there. They don't have a separate, intelligence that they know this is good or bad. They just take whatever's there. So what you eat and what you digest is what goes into your system. So if it's undigested, then they take that undigested toxins into the body. And then that sits, that will move through the body, but the toxins will sit wherever the body is weak. So any part of the body that has any weakness, that will collect those toxins. And then from that will then start a disease with time. So that's why some people always have diseases in one place. You get rid of it and then it comes back again in the same place, because that's the weak part of the body. So whatever it is, it's weak. then that will collect the toxins. So you can get rid of the toxins, then you're fine. But if you indigestion is there again, then the toxins will build up in that same place. Like that. So like that, then it starts from the digestion. So in the same way, the whole material disease starts from the disease to control and enjoy. We want to control and enjoy the Lord's energy. So then Krishna gives us the material world, and we become attached to this material world. So by wearing the Lord's remnants, then, and eating the Lord's remnants, then that frees us, this gradually frees us from these material contaminations. Therefore, by being freed from that, all the diseases in that also go away. They're going away because of devotional service, advancement in devotional service. Like that. That is what is happening. Because otherwise the prarabdha karma will remain. But as we remove the cause of that prarabdha karma, then automatically that goes away also. Right? They're connected. Material consciousness creates material activity, which creates material result. Right? Good or bad. You get rid of material consciousness, you get rid of material activity, you get rid of material result. Right? So it works, therefore it uses the point gradually, because we have to be convinced. Right? By taking prasad once, by smelling the Lord, the remnants of the tulsi from the lotus feet of the Lord once, one can on the spot become a pure devotee. The example is the four Kumaras. As they were on the Brahma-Bhuta platform, they smelled the tulsi leaves, and immediately they were attracted and surrendered and became devotees. But they were on the Brahma-Bhuta platform. So there's no material contamination. So for ourselves, who are conditioned, then when we take these things, it attracts us something, only because there's so much that is holding us back. So it gradually gets rid of some of that and moves us forward a little bit. But the power of prasad, power of the holy name, and this is none different from Krishna, it can immediately take. But we don't want. That's the thing. We have to consciously want. Otherwise, unconsciously, it's going to purify in everything. But we also have to consciously want. And that consciously then will take us more quickly. Then that will speed everything up very much. So these should always be accepted, but we must also be careful about them falling on the ground and that. These must be accepting any of the remnants of the Lord. We have to be very careful that we do not offend them like that, because the glory, it is non-different from the Lord, and the benefits we get are so great. We have to be very, very careful that we understand this relationship, that the Lord is very kindly making himself available in these forms that we can appreciate. So we must take that extra care to not also offend. Any questions on this? Okay. Dancing before the deity. In the Dwarka Mahatmya, the importance of dancing before the deity is stated by Lord Krishna as follows. A person who in a jubilant spirit, who feels profound devotional ecstasy while dancing before me, and who manifests different features of bodily expression, can burn away all the accumulated sinful reactions he has stocked up for many, many thousands of years. In the same book, there is a statement by Narad, wherein he asserts, from the body of any person who claps and dances before the deity, showing manifestations of ecstasy, all the birds of sinful activities fly away upward. Just as by clapping the hands one can cause many birds to fly away, similarly the birds of all sinful activities which are sitting on the body can be made to fly away simply by dancing and clapping before the deity of Krishna. So Krishna is very pleased when we reciprocate in this way, that we are very happy to chant his name and reciprocate in this way by chanting, dancing. And then this, in this way, just the sinful reactions and all that are burnt away, because anything in connection with Krishna just does this. It just burns these things up. Very, very powerful. So here is chanting and dancing, we see, are especially powerful. And here also the clapping, because in the clapping, And when you do the clap, then that sound just makes the birds fly. So then by clapping and dancing, then the birds of sinful activities, they fly away. They just leave. And so it mentions here for many thousands, many, many thousands of years. Like that. So this is very, very powerful. So one may wonder, why is it after one time we just chant and dance? Because there's many, more than many, many thousands of years we have been here in the material world. So therefore, it takes a few kirtans to clear things up. But the positive results of that attraction for Krishna and all that, we can see immediately. A nice kirtan, nice association with devotees, any of these devotional activities, and you're very enlightened, very enlivened. And then that is very, very, how you say, very inspiring. That's a good sign that we liked doing these devotional activities. It means we're developing an attraction for Krishna and his activities. Though we may forget that due to our contamination, material contamination. So the idea is that as we become purified and remove that, then slowly, slowly, that goes away. Just as a point of information, when we want to go through where people are sitting, then we want to go through a place where there's some devotees sitting, then we should bend over a little bit and put our hand that we want to go like that, because that's the etiquette from our side, the humility, and then the other person knows we're coming, and then naturally then we'll get through and the other person will be able to adjust. Is that understood?
That may be rude, like, I did, right? I didn't bend my legs down, but I put my hand
there. Here, but there you did?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. It just looked a bit fast. Like that. One must respect others and ladies specifically. We have to respect the potency of ladies, or we'll be overwhelmed by that potency. Okay, that's any questions on this? Dancing? Okay. Bowing down in honor of the deity? In the Naradiya Purana, there's a statement about bowing down and offering respect to the deity. It is said there, a person who has performed a great ritualistic sacrifice, and a person who has simply offered his respectful obeisances by bowing down before the Lord, cannot be held as equals. The person who has executed many great sacrifices will obtain the results of his pious activities, but when such results are finished, he has to take birth again on the earthly planet. However, the person who has once offered respects, bowing down before the deity, will not come back to this world, because he will go directly to the abode of Krishna. So we see this example with Vritrasura and Indra. That Vritrasura, he is offering his respects to the Supreme Lord. The demigods are offering their respects, but it's actually to get the Lord's attention, to get his blessings, so that they may get what they want materially. So it's not the offering of respects is not very deep. It is there. They're devotees. They're going to the Lord for their material needs. But we see Vritrasura, he is offering his obeisances out of devotion. Actual devotion. So then he, at the end of the body, he goes back to Godhead. And Indra, after the end of that body, he will come again and be born on this planet. So he was big, big Indra there. But then next life, he'll be someone moving here on this planet like everybody else. He may be a little bit bigger than others, like that. He may have more position or wealth or influence, but he's still back here again. Well, those who offer obeisances, they go back to Godhead. So this is very important. Though it seems very simple, and the other one seems very, very, very great, like that Indra's done 100 ashwamedha yajnas. I mean, it's very difficult. Offering obeisances seems to be very easy. But actually, it is easier to do the Ashwamedha Yajna, because that you just have to become very materially enlivened. Right? And so there's many people who are becoming very materially enlivened, and they do great things. But to offer respects or obeisances means that we have to have gone beyond that. We're not interested in the material world anymore. We're actually interested in solutions now, rather than just facilities. We want solutions, because we've had facilities. We've been Indra, we've been Brahma, we've been a worm and stool, and we see that whatever the position, we're not happy like that. So then that is greater. The one bowing down in honor of the deity, they're the greatest. They're the most pious, right? Only if you're pious, you can do these ritualistic activities, and it accrues one more piety. But only by bowing down before the deity, that is gives the greatest piety. And only the most, how do you say, those who get blessed by the Lord, then this can happen. Anything in that? Okay, standing up to receive the Lord. In the Brahmananda Purana, it is said, a person who sees the Lord's Rath Yatra car festival and then stands up to receive the Lord can purge all kinds of sinful results from his body. So whenever we see the Lord, then we stand up. This is if the Lord comes out on any festival, here the Rath Yatra festival, or he comes out on the elephant or on the palanquin, or you know, in some way the deity comes out like that. Or we're in the temple, the temple is closed, then the curtains open, then we stand up to receive the Lord, then all kinds of sinful reaction results are purged from the body. So this standing to receive someone, that is actually the proper etiquette, in the very formal sense that one stands to receive. Otherwise, many times you see, it's not uncommon, you see devotees sitting with his legs crossed, the deity's open, he just kind of like rolls forward a little bit, touches the head on the ground, and then rolls back to his sitting position. You know? Like that. So that's not exactly what is meant here. Here is meant that you actually stand up, then offer your obeisances. Right? Because dandavat means falling down like a stick. It doesn't mean rolling, you know? It says falling down like a stick. So one has to stand to offer obeisances. So that is the system. Also, we see that when receiving the spiritual master or any senior, you know, devotee or someone of great respectability, then we stand up like this. It's just, that's the common etiquette, even in the material etiquettes, the social etiquette, that is also there. Some very big person comes, it's expected you'll stand up. You'll only remain seated if you're so much bigger or senior to them, so much that it's not the position. The distance is so great, you know, then you don't stand up like that. You know, like the Queen of England or something, and someone comes to meet her, then she may not stand up like that. But otherwise, if not, one has to stand. One will see that. Receiving big guests, or you're doing a big preaching program, and you have big ministers, or the prime minister, or the president, or a governor, or, you know, some high court justice, or things like this, they come. When they come, you may be sitting. When they come up on it, you have to stand up. That's just the etiquette. We see, because they are carrying that potency of the Lord. The Lord himself we're respecting by standing, and anyone who's carrying that potency of the Lord, the spiritual masters, senior devotees, they carry that potency of the Lord. Then the potency of management and influence that is carried by these other, you know, great political personalities, or someone has a great amount of Krishna's fame, they're very famous, or they're very beautiful, or they're very wealthy, or they're very knowledgeable, or they're very renounced. Whatever it is, that must be respected. Like Prabhupada said, you have to offer obeisances when one sees a sannyasi. So then one time, I forget where they were, Hyderabad or something, and there was one Mayavad sannyasi. And then the devotee didn't offer obeisances. I think it was the sannyasi. And then Prabhupada said, you know, why are you not offering your obeisances? They're sannyasi. Because in South, if you see sannyasis in South India, means that they're coming in, they're bona fide Shankarites. You know, they're coming in the Shankara line. So then they're practicing very properly. They're not just some babas, you know, you know, like that you find in North India. In the South, they're very paka. But even though they're impersonalists, the Mayavadi, still the sannyas ashram must be respected. So we offer our obeisances. We don't hear from them. You know, that's as far as our respect goes. But that must be because they're carrying that quality of Krishna's renunciation. So any of these opulences of Krishna must be respected. Whoever is carrying that must be respected. So generally that means standing up. And then after that, then whatever it is, some greeting, some shaking hands, offering obeisances, offering, you know, some welcome, whatever it may be. So that is the position. So the Lord, then being the source of all respect, respectable personalities and respectable energies, therefore naturally when seeing Him, one stands up, then offers obeisances. Right. Any questions on that? Yes.
Raj, you mentioned to us before about the life is getting disturbed if you didn't stand
up. Manu Samhita mentions that when a senior person comes in front of you, then the life airs start to go upwards. So if we don't stand up, then the life airs leave the body and we become weak. Like that. So by standing up, you catch them. You know? Like that. See some senior person or you see the Lord, then the life airs just start going up. Because the life airs, they respect the Lord. Right? Vayu respects the Lord. Vayu, he is of amongst the demigods, means when we're just dealing with the demigods that have all the different positions of the Lord, Vayu is the guru. Right? He is considered the guru. Like that. Hanuman then is his expansion. So we respect Hanuman as, you know, guru, as acharya who teaches devotional service. So Vayu is respected. So then when someone senior comes, Vayu, he being the guru, he follows. So he moves upwards. So we have to stand, otherwise he leaves the body. So it's not considered proper. Is that...
Is the proper to offer obeisances to sannyasi if the door is open?
Is it proper to offer obeisance to sannyasi if the deity doors are open? One can. But one at some point has to offer. Even if one doesn't offer there, at some other point one has to offer. You understand? Because it means the... How do you say? The question arises because of... We think we're offering obeisances to the person. Right? The same person, they're not sannyasi, we're not offering obeisances to. They take sannyasi, we're offering obeisances to. We're respecting the ashram. We may also know and respect that person. You know what I'm saying? But the bottom line is we're respecting the sannyas ashram. Right? You understand? So like that. That is the way it works. It's just a leader, a manager, they are respected. We may respect them personally as an individual or not, but the position has to be respected. We can say whatever we like. Someone is the temple president. We may know that they've done this or that or do so many things like that. But that doesn't mean we can disrespect the position of temple president. It's not allowed because that position is having the potency of Krishna. Right? We're not the doer because we think we're the doer. We think the other person is the doer. So he's doing the temple presidentship. No. The potency to perform those activities comes from the Lord. So any position of knowledge, respect, authority, of wealth, any of these qualities, these six opulences of Krishna, these have to be respected. They must be respected. Whether that individual you respect or not, that's another thing. That's between you and them. But it's not between you and that position. That position has to be respected. That's called culture. That's etiquette. So we think they're the doer because they have this weakness in their character or personality or that. Or I don't even know who they are, so I just don't deal right. But that doesn't mean that position that Krishna has given, that potency to do that service, then can be avoided, can be ignored. You understand? So this is how Krishna consciousness works, is that we see Krishna in everything. So the potency of someone to be a temple president, to be a preacher, to be lead in any way, that must be respected. Then there's no problem. Then one can always respect whoever. One is then always very humble and very gentle and very respectful. Because he sees Krishna. That's why I said that separately we don't endeavor to become humble and this and that. We endeavor to become Krishna conscious. But we have to know how to endeavor to become Krishna conscious. Therefore these books are there. So if we don't study these books, and we don't practice these books, and we just say, oh, we just chant Hare Krishna, that's fine as long as that's all we're doing. We're just sitting in the temple chanting all day, and when somebody says, hey Prabhu, can you wash the pots? We go wash the pots. While we're washing, we're chanting Hare Krishna, and when we finish, we come back, sit down, and chant Hare Krishna again. The example being Prabhupada gives of the genie in the lamp. You know? Is that the genie comes out and he says, give me something to do. He says, okay, you know, you clean the room here. So he does it in a moment. Okay, now what? Oh, then you clean this and that. And he goes on so many things till the whole kingdom is clean, and then the genie is back again. And if he doesn't give him something to do, then he'll eat him. So then he thinks, what to do? So then he tells him, okay, you see this pole here? He says, you go from the bottom to the top, and you get the top, you go to the bottom, and you get the bottom to the top, and you do that. You know, you keep doing that until such time as I have something else for you to do, and then I'll give you that to do. So then Prabhupada says, that is our japa. Right? We go from one side to the other. When we get to there, we go back again, and we go like this. So all we're doing is chanting Hare Krishna. And when there's some other service, we do that. So this way, then the demon of the mind, this genie of the mind, is kept busy. Right? So like that. So if we're on that platform, okay, then we can say we just chant Hare Krishna. But if besides this we're endeavoring for so many nice material facilities, then we have to understand that do we have to have Krishna consciousness in connection to all those material facilities. So therefore we see whatever we have, whatever we're doing, whoever we meet, everybody in relation to Krishna. So that takes practice. It's called sadhana bhakti. And we must have the knowledge, right? We have knowledge and we practice it, right? We hear, then we practice. Then from that combination, then we practice that in devotion, we get realization. Then it becomes more natural. In the beginning, it'll be more difficult. It's more mechanical. But everything's mechanical in the beginning. Sometimes devotees will find it's difficult and then they don't know what to do, and then they find some new age guru who tells them, yes, it's not natural, your lifestyle is too mechanical, you know, too much, you're just going through these motions. You should just do what's natural to you. You know, be an animal. You know, just follow your senses, whatever they want to do, do that. Right? But this is, in the beginning of anything, it takes practice. So the person decides, yes, this is the problem, I'm restricting myself, I should just let myself go. But then anything in the material world takes practice, right? The first smoke you take practically kills you. You have to practice for it doesn't. The first drink, you know, knocks you on your backside. You know, it's like this. It takes a lot of time for people to become very expert at the affairs between men and women. It doesn't just happen off the bat. So they have to practice, right? They hear and they practice. And then with practice, they develop with their devotions to this, they develop attachments, and then they get realization on how to perform these better. Right? So it works in that way. So it's still mechanical. But it appears to be more natural because it's just the senses. And going after the other, then it takes some faith. There must be faith. So when there's weak faith, then we can be distracted from one sadhana to another, to material sadhana. They're both sadhana. But it's just a matter if you're going to follow Krishna's sadhana and go to Krishna, or material sadhana and go to hell. Like that. Krishna says there's only one path. So in Krishna's path, you have sadhana. right? Until you come to the platform of attachment. Then it comes natural, right? So until you develop, so you're either developing attachment for Krishna or attachment to the material nature. And in between, there's always practice. So this is, we must develop that practice. We must develop this, how do you say, this sadhana of serving Krishna. So that faith must be there. We must hear, and we must practice. Then it comes. Then it can be. Anything else on this? Yes, ma'am. Yeah, so that would be, okay, then that answers that. But that doesn't mean the aspect of where they're respecting the spiritual master as a representative of the Lord, because then that aspect is there. Therefore, Vyas Pujas and that, if they happen in the temple, there's zero philosophical problem with it. But just on the day-to-day culture, then that other would be the natural point to not offer the basis. So that's in the Gundicha Marjan pastime. So then that's nice. It solves this problem.
But I appreciate very much your point that when it comes to a point of it being there's a period of time and the principle is
That's a special occasion. Just like you don't wear red in front of the deity, but it's the custom you see all over India, but in everywhere, all sampradayas, everything, that the women wear red saris when they get married. So one could argue this and that, it's offensive. It's one time, that's the problem. So it's the whole thing is the Lord's everything is very balanced. It's very, very balanced in this way, is that this is the principle, but under this situation then there may be some difference. But this purport can't be used to say the Vyas Puja can't be in the temple. It means most don't want it in the temple. But that's just their own preference. But philosophically there's no problem in it happening, because you're worshipping the spiritual master as a representative of the Supreme Lord, of Vyasadeva, of the Supreme Lord. So that understanding, that potency, so that ceremony is there. Then there is the individual who is in that position. So there's always two things happening at once. There's the position, and then there is the individual that is performing that activity. Just like you have a demigod, but then you have the individual who is performing that potency, performing that activity. Like we read about Indra, but all these Indras, they all have different names. So it's generally not necessarily the same Indra, like that, but different ones, and there's different, like Sukracharya. There's always someone in the seat of Sukracharya, though it's always changing who it is, like that. So that's a particular potency, or Indra is a particular potency. Then there's the individual who sits in that seat. So like that, then there's the spiritual master representing the Lord, but then there's the individual who is doing that.
So it means that when we got their answers to Jagannath, we actually year and then crashed up was there. So what would be the proper etiquette for doing that?
Then you just come in the temple, offer obeisances to Jagannath, and then go and offer obeisances to Panchatattva. You know, just like we come in and offer obeisances to Prabhupada and then Shingadev and go to Radha and Krishna. So in this way we go to Jagannath and go to Lord Chaitanya. So also then we have the aspect that could support the not offering obeisances is that the because what we're offering obeisances to is that that representation of that portion of the Lord's potency manifest in that person or in that position of that person. So when you have the Supreme Lord or the source of that, there's no need of offering obeisances to the portion of that. You know, just like when the demigods are there and the Lord's there, there's no need to separately worship or respect the demigods because the Lord is there. So if that's done, you worship Him. They don't have to be worshipped. They are, how you say? They are satisfied because their potency is just coming from the Lord anyway. So if you respect the Lord, we're respecting their potency. So that aspect is...
This point kind of helps us to understand. Like many times you explained that, you know, this that you shouldn't see a spiritual master without connection to Krishna. So this will help us remember that there is that relationship between Guru and Krishna. Otherwise, it comes to that personality call that you know.
That's a good point. Did you hear that? He was saying that by understanding that when the spiritual master is in front of the deity, we're not offering obeisance to the spiritual master there. Then or sannyasi, like this, then it helps us remember the relationship between the two. Otherwise, then we may have a tendency to not really think of the Lord, and we just think of the spiritual master, and then it becomes kind of a personality cult.
It's also very nice that the Guru, when he comes before the deity, he pays obeisances, but the disciple pays obeisances at the same time as the Guru.
Yeah, but that's very nice, because then it's just, yeah. Because that's then accepting, that's the aspect of that even though we're not offering obeisances to them specifically, is that our approach to the Lord is still through the devotees. So when they offer their respects, we are offering also. In this way then it's... So you don't offer obeisances when you see them, but if they offer respects, then you can offer. But still, then at some point in the day, then the obeisances should be offered, you know, to them specifically. You know, either when we first see them or when they see us, like that. Both are there. You know this? One offers respect, obeisances to the sannyasi or to the spiritual master, you know, whoever it is that we are accustomed to offering obeisances to, when we first see them and when they first see us. So if it's simultaneous, then it means we'll be offering obeisances once. But if it's not, then we'll be offering obeisances twice. We may see them at a distance, we offer our obeisances. But then when they get close, where they recognize us, then we offer obeisances at that time. Like that. So both have to be done. There's something, Prabhupada was coming somewhere to some, being received at some temple and he was coming, so there's hundreds of devotees. And then always it's different when Prabhupada's coming. You can't see Prabhupada because of all the devotees. Then everybody offers obeisances. And then, after offering obeisances, everybody gets up again, and then you have the same problem. So one devotee decided, I'll do like this. When I first see Prabhupada, I'll offer obeisances. And then, as the others see, they'll offer their obeisances. At that time, I'll be standing up, and then I'll be able to see Prabhupada. So, he did like that. And then when Prabhupada saw him, then he told him, you know, bow down, you know. Because then it's, he may have, when he saw, but then when Prabhupada sees him, he's not offering obeisances. So he broke the etiquette there. Yes?
So they said, for ladies, when Sanyasi, Sanyasi, they offer basic stuff to the Sanyasi classes. That's what I mean.
I don't know. Yeah, I've noticed that. I mean, it wasn't practiced in India like that, but it seems to be practiced in the West everywhere. Yeah. It means I'm not sure where it would have come from it, unless they're working from the when Lord Chaitanya came, then the ladies would offer obeisances, you know, 50 feet away or something. Unless it's coming from that. Huh?
Isn't there an exchange between the personality of
the Avaikasvamika? There traditionally is that when someone offers obeisances, obeisance is being offered to has to reciprocate with that, either by offering obeisances or by recognizing the person that's offered obeisances. Like that. Otherwise, if someone doesn't do that, then that person technically is unfit to offer obeisances to, because they don't know the system. Like that, because someone is surrendering, but their respect is being offered to that position, you know, position of either as how you say, as sannyas or as someone senior who is, you know, a respectable personality, so that position is being respected. We may also be respecting the individual or the super soul, but in any case, it's not seen that this is the obeisances are for oneself. Therefore, there has to be acknowledgement of them. Otherwise, if that's not done, then one takes on the sinful reaction of the person who offers the obeisances. Like that. So that would be the, you know, if just people offer obeisances and you walk by, yes, I am the special person that everyone should offer obeisances to, and don't reciprocate that, then one takes on all the reactions of all those persons. So we can see that, you know, in the past, many would follow that padati. It was not always very good for their devotional life, you know, like that, because it was. You know. You'd have to ask the. I don't know what would be the tradition. In, but if they haven't passed? Yeah. Yeah. Because otherwise then there's no... It may be because the idea of just... I don't know. Maybe it's from the aspect of... Because you had these small crowded temples with little hallways, and then if you offer obeisances, then they can't walk by or something. So they say, let them walk by, offer obeisances. It would have to be seen where it started. I'm always amazed that there's certain rituals... They get established in the West. I don't know where they come from. But they become established so strongly and like evenly. All 350 of our temples do it. But other things that Prabhupada talks about, purport after purport, you can go to all the temples and you'll see one or two devotees that ever do it, you know, in all the temples, not one or two in each. You know? It's just, I find it very... I haven't figured it out yet, but there's certain things like the ritual of the, you know, the ritual of the flower. You know, you have to come no matter where you go. You know, when you're singing the kirtan, the new bhakti will bring it and stick it in your nose when you're singing. You know, and he somehow or another expects you have the mystic power to smell and sing at the same time. You know, like that. It's every temple they do that. It's not. I haven't seen one that's different, you know. Or they come up and sprinkle the water behind you, you know. In India, you just take it and throw it all over everybody from the front. But somehow in the West, they come and go behind you, and when you're not looking, sprinkle some on your head, you know. Oh, I see. Well, they're supposed to bow their head a bit. That's also because they don't throw it very well. So the first guys in the front, which always happen to be the ones that make all the rules, then they get handfuls all over their glasses. Like that. So could be. But then the thing is when it's coming from the front, or at least when it's, you know it's there, there's some respect. Well, just behind, it's kind of like something hit on your head, and what was that? You look around, and then you see, oh, it's that guy, you know, it's the sprinkling the water on the back of your head, Walla, you know, so then, so the whole thing is it becomes impersonal, like that. That it can be, it means it's whatever is natural, you know. But the thing is it's how you say, it's very natural to be shy. It means it's just there for everyone. We also see that in the astrology and all the planets, except for Mercury, who basically kind of in one sense represents the, you know, the business mentality. All other planets in front of the sun, when they get very close to the sun, become very, very, they lose their power. So losing, not losing their power, it's not that this whole thing of a tussle and force and all that, it's because of relationship. When you're in front of the king, everybody else becomes a little humble. That's just the culture. Like that. You know, businessmen are another thing. You know, they see this as their opportunity to make the contacts and, you know, get all the pictures taken and, you know, do all the right things to increase their business. But otherwise, all the others, then they don't become, they become more gentle. So it's very natural that for that to happen. The standing to the side, this and that, that's very, very, very common. You know, because there's the aspect of offering obeisances the one time, you know, of seeing in the day, then all the other times, then one might just stand to the side. That's very common. Especially if, yeah, that's that. See, it's hard to say it's like this, because you're dealing with mentalities, you're dealing with the situations, and, you know, there's no real harm in it, but it's not that if someone doesn't do it like that, then there's something wrong. But you just have to see the situation. You know, one has to see is if where, like many times you'll see, I'll be going to, you know, someplace, like I'll go in to wash hands or something before going to the temple. There'll be a devotee who's there washing their hands. And as they're coming out, they see me coming in. So right in the gate, they offer obeisances right there. So you can't get in and all that. So they don't, you know, they're not really thinking in this way. So they just, instead of seeing, coming out, let you go and offer obeisances, or stand to the side, offer obeisances, and that. It's right there, but they don't realize the whole situation, what's going on. You know? You know, they don't even realize maybe you're coming to wash your hands there. You know, you're moving in the gate, you're going that direction, but they don't really put two and two together. So one has to see that also, the position and this and that. You know? Because that respect or reciprocation can also be there, how you say, even before offering obeisances. Obeisances can be after that, or that can be after obeisances. It doesn't. And you'll find most devotees, after they offer obeisances, never look up again to see if the person's around or like that anyway. You know, that's also very, most don't. They kind of like offer the obeisances, and as they get up, they're already looking and moving in the opposite direction of wherever they were going, like that. So then one is not obliged to reciprocate those kind of obeisances either, like that. So it's however you feel comfortable. I mean, yes, Martin.
Suppose we see sannyasi at a distance, and maybe we are not
No, then you just offer obeisances. Yeah, yeah. If you just see from a distance. See, it's just, there's two times when it would be offered. When you first see, and when they first see you. So you may just first see them, and then maybe they never see you in the day. So you're just, that one time you would have offered your obeisances. But if you happen to later in the day bump into them, you don't think, well, I offered my obeisances already. And when they first see you, then obeisances are offered. Yeah, but that's the first one, yeah. Because when we see them, we offer obeisances. But then when they see us, then again we have to offer. Yeah, again. It's those two times. Many times the two come together. You know, when we first see them, they see us, and then that's done in one. But if we see them from a distance, then we will offer obeisances. Then if we happen to see them closer where they see us, then again we'd offer obeisances. But it's not so important to keep offering throughout the day once that's been done. If one personally wants to, that's fine. With a spiritual master, then that would be like that. But otherwise, you know, just for seeing a sannyasi or other senior devotee like that, then that one time is... means the one time means that category of one, meaning first seeing them, them first seeing you. So it may be one obeisance, it may be two. Does that make sense? That's the thing, it's very subtle. Yes?
So I just
That's in Gayatri. We're offering our respect, because minimum is three times a day we're remembering, morning, noon, and evening. We should be remembering all day. It's just like chanting Hare Krishna. Minimum we chant 16 rounds. We should be chanting 24 hours a day. But minimum is 16. So in that, at least the morning, the noon, and the evening. But we see in the Pancharatra, they'll work in even more than that. When we first wake up in the morning, when we start our activities, you know, or when we start where we're thinking about our activities and offer prayers at that, then in the Gayatri we'll do, then when we go to the temple, before we start the puja, like that, when we actually, in the puja, then we worship the spiritual master. Then after the puja, then the remnants are offered to the spiritual master. Like that. So many times it's worked in. But that three is minimum. Because maybe one's not doing any specific deity worship or anything like that. So those three times, when one chants the Gayatri at least, then one should remember.
Maharaji, you mentioned that with respect there's to the position and then there's the actual person. And you said... I mean, you said that when it comes to respecting the person, then that's a different issue. But is there some point at which there should always be respect even to the person?
Of course. It means we see all living entities as servants of the Lord. But I'm just saying as a minimum is that someone in the position, you can't deal with them improperly because they're in that position. Like that. And... even technically, if they were ever in that position and we were under them, that relationship basically remains. We respect them. It means that you joined in some temple someplace, someone was the temple president there, you know, 20 years later you meet that person, you would still respect them because this person was your temple president. You know, it may be very minimal, very small, and, you know, after that, that respect, it may turn into a very nice relationship, friendship, and then after that it would be work on that. But that aspect that, you know, here was the person, you know, or he was my teacher, or he was my, like this, you know. So it's, these relationships have some meaning. The whole things, we may say, well, that's, you know, things have changed, but things have changed from our perspective, you know. But the whole aspect is, it's just like the child. When they're small, the mother takes care. When they're big and they have their own children, the mother's still their mother. You know, they may be taking care of their mother now, but still they are respecting in that rasa of mother. So the rasa has been established. This person we would see as senior to us. Right? So if that is done, that relationship's there, then you would have... I've seen it. I've seen you have, you know, some GBC sannyasi, you know, very big preacher. And then, you know, somehow or another, some situation, they bump into some devotee. And just very kind of obscure, very, you know, out of the way person and all that. And then this, you know, the senior person, you know, seemingly there is being very nice to them and kind of, then you find out and you know how is everything and being very nice to them. And then you find out this is the person that made them a devotee. And they're dealing very, very nice because they made me a devotee, so they respect them. Even though the other person, no, Maharaj, you know, you're this, that, and you know, I did that for, you know, I was just, you know, preaching, you know, Prabhupada said, so like that. They don't take any credit, but still that respect is offered. I've seen that a few times, you know. But then you see many instances where they don't. They figure when they get a GBC or temple president or guru or regional secretary, then it doesn't matter. Everybody else is below them. But that's if we just, we have to decide whether we want to run our, if we want to run our life just on tattva, then we must also, we must respect all the tattvas. You know? Like that. Like how you say, mother is a tattva. That means it has to be respected. Father is a tattva. That must be respected. You know, teacher is a tattva. It must be respected. You know, but if it's just like technicality, you can't have, how you say, in the hierarchy, managerial hierarchy, and that's the outline of culture. It's never, the Vedas don't, that is one aspect of the whole fabric of culture. It's one aspect, it's not the aspect. So if we make that as the aspect, then we have a very stunted culture. So we have to, relationships are built on so many things. And once those are established, then they must be maintained. They may develop, mature, and, you know, they take their different flavors. Right? Just like the son, you know, the father's the authority, but when he gets older, that becomes more close, more friendship. They're working together in their service or in their activities or stuff like that. But still, the father is the senior, the son is the junior. You know? And even the son, he's getting better facility or gains more knowledge or like that. Still, it's his service to his father to, you know, use that in his service or instruct him in those things, but it's not that he becomes the senior. You know? Just like you'll see, when they're training, you take the Shri, generally in the Shris you won't have it so much, but in the Madhvas or the Shankarites, they're Acharya, because their Acharya will be very young, you know. Sometimes they're very, very young, you know. So then they have these, you know, they're always surrounded by this group of, you know, 15, 20 of their top, you know, pundits, each expert in a different field of knowledge. So they're the teachers, he's the student. But they always deal with him, he's the Acharya. So it's their service to the Acharya to teach him Sanskrit or Veda or astrology or, you know, some aspect like that. It's their service. So they say, you know, you sit, you listen, you pay attention, but their duty. It's not their thinking that they are superior. So naturally, they speak, he listens. Not that it's all because he's the Acharya, he doesn't have to listen to them. You know? No, they know, he doesn't. So if that's understood, then these kind of things work. Someone may be in a position of management, someone's expert in the field. Just because you're in the position that's higher doesn't mean you know the field. You listen to that person in the field. Ultimately, once you gain all the information, then you're going to use it how you know best, because you know how you know the whole field. But in that particular field, only a fool would say would make decisions. You know? Only a fool. Like that. Kings had ministers, they listened to them. Once they listened, then it was up to them, they did with it what they liked. But the ministers were never under them. Right? Ministers are never under them. The ministers are always above them. But the ministers also, because they weren't the ones doing it, then the other person. So there's mutual respect. The king respects the Brahmins because they have the knowledge and the austerity. Right? And the Brahmins respect the king because he is the one that actually does it. He manifests the directions of the scriptures. Scriptures say Dharma should run like this. The king makes it happen. So So therefore, the senior devotees in the temple must respect the temple president for that aspect, though the temple president may respect them as senior devotees. But in your managerial hierarchy, the person on top, everybody else is on the bottom. It doesn't matter. That's it. But you'll even see within the material world, those who really know how to run the system, they listen. They listen. Your top, you know, business and corporate managers, that if they have a guy that's just on the floor, and they say, ask how's it going, they say not so good because of this. If what he said is intelligent, that guy would be an idiot if he didn't listen. But unfortunately, due to ego, then many times we find ourselves the fool. So the culture is very important. So one has to know the tattva, and one has to know the culture, the rasa. The two together then work. Right? If you only have the tattva, it's impersonal. If you only have the rasa, it's sahaja. That's why it said razor's edge. One side is impersonalism, one side is sahaja. So you have to have both. So unless one can see it from both, then one shouldn't use one against the other, because they're both correct. But when you blend them, that's when you get reality. So generally we find that there's managerial, social, or even sometimes philosophical dissatisfaction because of this point. Tattva, the person's correct. You know, but culturally, not. You know? Or the other way around. So unless the two are there, you don't have anything. They have to be done together. You can't do them one or the other. Can't be. Very, very important. Otherwise, that's why you see so many philosophical discussions and conferences and all these different things, and no one's getting anywhere.
Culture.
Yeah, because the culture is being left out of it. If you bring in the culture, say, well, it's not practical. You know? But we see that everything that we're moving on, the culture has to be there. You know? You always have to deal with the other person. Or other persons, or the situation, time, place, circumstance. It always has to be there. So that's according to situation. Then it becomes practical.
It's like when you're speaking, just sort of a mood of gratitude for what one has received seems to be underlying in that appreciation of different personalities that you've had dealing with over a period of time.
Yes.
Seems to be the kind of essence of establishing that balance in the relationships that you have over a long period of time.
Yeah. You hear that? You're saying the gratitude that is there, that's based from those relationships, that's important. That itself creates a proper balance and everything like that.
Tendency is kind of to forget.
Yeah, tendency is always to forget what someone has done for us. Like that. That's the, because ultimately the reciprocation is what is being looked for. And on the, just the thing on the obeisances, so you have to also see the time, place, and circumstance of that. If you're in a situation where that is the norm, you just follow that. You know? And if you're in a situation where it's different, then you can follow like that. Yeah, well, they do. That's the natural thing of religion. then each different area has its own aspect of how they follow it, due to the so many things, just the climate, the region, the kind of people that are there, and that. So Krishna set it up like that. That's why you see the different cuisines are there. You just change from one place to another, and it completely changes. That's because the atmosphere is different. You know, what's actually, what's there, the whole situation, the climate, everything is, the land, it has a difference. Just like, depending on the color of the land, that gives a different result on the kind of people or mentality it creates. Like, if the soil is red, it creates one mentality. You know, the soil is not red, it creates different mentality. So it's just, all these things are there. The air has, you know, all these, there's so many different things. You know, you see, like, if the sun is out and it's a pleasant day, everybody's very bright and cheerful. And if it's cloudy and windy and terrible, then many people are, they just do whatever they're doing. They're not outgoing and not very extroverted and like that. So you just see if that fits very nicely, that atmosphere in that place, that's followed. The whole point, the ultimate point, is all coming down to respecting and reciprocation, because these things are there, because we come back to this. We have the tattva and we have the rasa. We come back to this. So they, when they're balanced, that's Krishna consciousness. Right? That's the razor's edge. And if it's too far one side or the other, then we have those particular problems that go with the one or the other. Anything else in there? Okay. Following the deity. A similar statement is there in the Bhavishya Purana, in which it is said, even if born of a lowly family, a person who follows the Rathayatra car when the deities pass in front or from behind will surely be elevated to the position of achieving equal opulence with Vishnu. So it means they would go to the Lord's planet. So the when the Lord goes by, one follows. It means we may have so many ideas of things we're doing, but the Lord's going somewhere, then we go. You know, if it's somebody we know we like very much, this and that, we may have so many plans we're going to do, but when they come by, we just go with them. So the same way as when the Lord goes by, we just go with him. Like that. And someone who does that, then they get even just for whatever, the position, elevated the position, achieving equal opulence with the Lord. You know? So then one can see that from the Vaikuntha, the equal opulence, or the equal opulence of just the atmosphere of whatever realm that it is, you know, whatever that realm is. Because the real opulence of, like, Vrindavan is that love for Krishna, the mood of separation, the Parakiya Rasa. These are the real opulences of there. Because otherwise no one notices the other opulences. I mean, the cow shed that they live in is basically more opulent than Vaikuntha, right? I mean, you don't hear of things as opulent as just what the cows stay in. When it in Bhagavatam describes Vaikuntha, it's very opulent, but it's not as opulent as the cow sheds that Nanda Baba keeps his cows in, you know? But no one notices. That's the thing. No one even cares. It's just, you know, of course you make, if you make a cow shed, you make it out of, you know, as an emerald columns and ruby tiles on the roof. I mean, it's just, you know, isn't that what everybody, how they make their cow sheds? And it's just, you know, no one thinks about it. Because they're always so absorbed in Krishna. They don't worry about those things. So that's the real opulence. Any questions on this? What time is it now? Okay. It is going to the temple of Vishnu or to places of pilgrimage. It is stated in the Puranas, persons who attempt to visit the holy places of pilgrimage like Vrindavan, Mathura, or Dwaraka are actually glorified. By such traveling activities, they can pass over the desert of material existence. In the Hari Bhakti Shudodhai, there is a similar statement, Oh, there is a statement about the benefit of visiting the temples of Lord Krishna. As we have explained previously, in Vrindavan, Mathura, and Dwaraka, the system is that all the devotees take advantage of visiting the various temples situated in those holy places. It is stated in the Hari Bhakti Shudodaya. Persons who are impelled by pure devotional service in Krishna consciousness, and who therefore go to see the deities of Vishnu in the temple, will surely get relief from entering again into the prison house of a mother's womb. The conditioned soul forgets the trouble of living within the mother's womb during birth, but it is a very painful and terrible experience. In order to make an escape from this material condition, one is advised to visit a temple of Vishnu with devotional consciousness. Then one can very easily get out of the miserable condition of material birth. So we're going to travel. We're going to travel from one body to another, from one place of, you know, from one pilgrimage to the another, of one, you know, one mother's womb to another, because of our consciousness. We have a particular consciousness, then we will be attracted to a particular womb. So now if we can change that consciousness, you know, in a Krishna conscious way, and go to the places of pilgrimage or things that are connected with the Lord, that stops this cycle of birth and death, where we're going from place to place, birth to birth. So here we're going from holy place to holy place. So our traveling then is connected to the Lord. And then we are able to overcome the birth and death of this world. By that means, by going on that pilgrimage, we avoid this material pilgrimage. Any questions on that? Yes.
Slightly, it's on the same thing. I was just always wondering, always recommends going to Mathura, Vrindavan, or Jagannath Puri, but never Mayapur in the book. Is there any reason why that happens?
Why it always says Vrindavan, Mathura, Dwaraka, Puri, but not Mayapur? Because Mayapur is, one, it's non-different from Vrindavan, but it's Gupta Vrindavan. It's hidden. So these scriptures are always there. Means the Puranas are always there. Just that Vyasadeva writes them down. You have the Veda, which is Apurusheya, it's always existing. And then from that, then the various sages and that, then they have so many discussions on these points. And these become all the different histories and all the other forms of knowledge, all based on the Veda. So then those are always there. Like you see, you know, Nanda Baba talking about Bhagavad Gita. In the Gita it says, or I think even Kamsa quotes the Gita. You know? Like that. Because Bhagavad Gita means that knowledge spoken by the Lord, because he first spoke it to Vivasvan. So that knowledge, and everybody knows, is that knowledge of how we're not the body, we're soul, we're servant of the Lord. You know, we're not born, we don't die, we can't be killed, we don't kill others. You know, we should work according to our nature for the Lord. Like that. So that knowledge is known as the Gita, the Bhagavad Gita. So it's always going on. But at a particular point, Vyasadeva writes it down at the beginning of the Kali Yuga, because in the other Yugas they just hear it, they remember it. But in the Kali Yuga, unless you write it down, no one remembers it. So it's there. But otherwise these are always there. So these are written for all time. And going to places of pilgrimage is always good. In any age. Like you see, whenever anybody would do austerities, they would do it in these holy places. Like Dhruva Maharaj, I think he did his austerities in Madhuban in Vrindavan. Right? There's many. Others did there, don't know? Yeah, so many have done there, you know, places there and different things like this. You know? So it's but Mayapur is hidden because the Kali Yuga avatar is hidden. Like that. But it's non-different from Vrindavan. So if you mention Vrindavan, it means Mayapur also. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it's clear.
Okay. Yes?
There's all these benefits for doing all these things. It's only talking about the activity that there's not any mention of the Vav.
Mention of the?
Proper Vav. So is there any way that's just
No, it says here, persons who are impelled by pure devotional service in Krishna consciousness and who therefore go to see the deities of Vishnu in the temple will surely get relief from entering again into the prison house of the mother's womb.
So, I was mentioning, maybe especially this one, but everything we're doing this evening, a lot of it doesn't seem to mention the quality of the action.
Because before the qualities have been described in Samanya Bhakti, that it's pure devotional service, what is pure devotional service and all that. So that's general. And then based upon, means this whole book is based upon, this will come to later. When we finish this first section, then we'll go back through like an analysis of this, all this. And we'll see there that the whole book is based on this shloka, Anyavi Lashita Sunyam. Means this whole book is an explanation of that verse. So it's understood that we're meaning here the mood of developing pure devotional service. Then in pure devotional service, then you have all these activities. So that is broken up into sadhana bhakti, bhava bhakti, and prema bhakti. And then in sadhana bhakti, then it's broken up into 64 items that one performs in this mood of pure devotion. So those 64 are performed. Does that make any sense? Yeah. That's why it's called the science of devotion, the complete science of bhakti yoga, nectar of devotion. Is that it's understood, it's a principle that is used in writing the scriptures, especially when they're dealing with philosophical points and if they want to establish something in a very, very simple way, then you make a main point. And then there's so many sub-points under those. Those sub-points are all in connection with that main point. Like that, they call this adhikarana. That you have the adhikarana means it's this is the main theme. And under that, so many points are there. You know? Like devotional service is the theme. And then under that, then you have sadhana, bhava, and prema. Then you take one of those, okay, now we're going to describe this, and then that has so many subdivisions, so many sub. So it can just means it's the philosophy, it's unlimited. You know, Ananta's been speaking since time immemorial with his thousands of mouths, unlimited mouths, and he's still talking. So in the same way as Krishna's so big that, you know, one can get so great on these things, and he has entered every atom, so therefore one can talk down to that detail. So you have up to big, big philosophical concepts down to very minute detail. It's all included. So it's just a matter of understanding where we came from. Like these are all just describing the 64 items of devotional service that one should perform. The first five chapters are saying one should do devotional service. Now this, then the sixth chapter says, okay, these are the activities of devotional service. You know, you do these 10 items you should do, these 10 items you shouldn't do. Then, having accomplished that, now these 44 are what should be regularly going on in your day-to-day life as they come up. Then these next chapters just give all the evidences behind it, because you said it. You know, because it's proper that you say something, you give the conclusion, but then you give the backup, the siddhanta. You give the siddhanta, then you give all the evidence, the praman. That. So these are the praman. They'll go on for so many chapters. And when that finishes, then this will finish, then it'll go into the spontaneous devotional service, which then gets more into the mood. The basic mood, the developing the faith and doing, is already explained in the first five chapters. Then when it comes to a more advanced level of mood, that will be explained in spontaneous devotional service. When that matures to deeper, then it will explain bhava bhakti, and more deep than prema bhakti. But that faith and all that, because generally what's happening is for the those who are beginning devotional service, then when they begin, many times all you have is the activity. Because the mentality is lost. You start doing something and you forget. You're off thinking of something else. but at least the body's doing the activity. You know, so we wanted to enjoy the material nature. Then we develop a particular, we're covered by the ego. Then we use our mind to decide what kind of activities we want to enjoy, and then the body is what we enjoy it with. So our goal is what the body does. So then at least we're using the body in the Lord's service, even if we don't have the mentality behind it proper, that we're doing that activity. And by doing that activity, we're not doing an activity that would be there from some other speculative mental concoction. So it's better than just doing any old nonsense. But by regularly doing that, we see from this we're purified of so much sinful reactions and this and that. Then it will make it much easier to remember Krishna. So then while we're doing the activity, we'll start to remember Krishna. And then slowly it'll come. You know, so it's kind of like going through the back door, but you know, that's just what one has to do. You know, like that. It should be we start with the consciousness. So there is some change in the consciousness, otherwise we wouldn't change our activities and become a devotee. So that slight change has created such a big difference that we changed from basically the material activities to spiritual activities. Though, so we can imagine that if such a small change creates such a big change on the gross platform, then how dynamic is a great change in the consciousness than what that gets? Mm-hmm. And what that gets. So that creates the awareness of the spiritual realm and the one spiritual form and one's relationship with the Lord. So that's something very, very great. So it's just one has to change that. Because that goal is very far. The material world is, we take the material world as very significant, so we see all the changes in relationship to that, therefore the Vaidhi Sadhana. But the material world is actually quite insignificant. Therefore, such a small change in the consciousness can make such a big change in the material platform. And then we wonder, okay, we made this big change, but how come we're not, you know, how come in 3 years we didn't become a pure and alloyed devotee? It's because the spiritual realm is very significant. So we have to get ourselves through that to the right place. We have to get ourselves from here to Vrindavan. So that's quite significant. But to change from the material world to taking up spiritual life, that's actually very... The material world is so small. It, like I said, it becomes reduced down to the size of a cat's hoofprint. We think it's an insurmountable ocean because we want to enjoy it, so Krishna covers us. But as soon as we don't want to, we want to serve Krishna, then Krishna reduces it to the size of a cat's hoofprint, which is the reality of what it is. You know? I mean, it's just a bunch of material elements, but they're put together very nicely. You know? That's the thing. Whatever we're attracted to in the material, it's just put together nicely. But it's still just dead matter. So we put the significance that this is very valuable, this is like gold, we say this is very valuable. But if one is interested in spiritual, then it's not a very great value. Gold comes from the Chintamani stone. And Sanatana Goswami had a Chintamani stone that he used to just keep in the dust pile. You know? Because in Vrindavan, all the dust is Chintamani. So there's no difference. So he couldn't care less. You know? But that dust, the materialist is not able to do anything with. They can't take that dust and touch it to things and make it happen, because that dust is conscious. So when someone comes and asks for all these different things, then says, yeah, you can. You want all that, it's over there in the pile of dust there. Because they can see that one, that Chintamani stone, and they can relate to that. Anything else? so end here. Srila Prabhupada ki, Srila Rupa Goswami Pada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki, Jai Nityananda Prema Nanda.